Chapter 29 The Halls of On. The hallway stretched away until it disappeared in the far distance, lined with blue lights that shimmered like Zintgunt, pale and with no warmth at all. He felt the cold on his cheeks and in his hands, and under normal circumstances he would have shivered, but the godskin she had given him was fabulous, and so Udo felt little discomfort. Discomfort came only through his eyes. Sometimes they'd pass a window set deeply into the wall, through which he could see the cavern, if only he had the courage to look. Sometimes he had the courage. The cavern stretched out so far as to render the opposing side invisible. Even Irpisha, who was far-sighted, could not see the other end. Had Erda, the great worm, flown within, Udo might have overlooked her. She would have appeared as little more than a speck of dust. Then the window passed, and he was again able to focus on her movements, which was very good. Whenever he looked out those windows, Udo felt his sanity begin to unmoor.
Udo?
Yes?
Are you well?
He thought it an odd question before recalling her claim that she avoided searching within his mind.
Yeah. I'm all right, I guess.
You guess what?
I mean, I guess I'm all right.
She laughed.
Your breathing slowed and your heart quickened.
Sure, it's being in your presence, you know?
The back of her head shook slowly and he sighed. They both knew.
You cannot lie to me, Udo, no matter how skillful you might become. And you are not very skillful.
Wishing to change the subject, he asked,
Does it hurt?
Her head dipped. Udo suspected she'd looked down at herself. Then her head turned back so she could look at him through one perfect, darkly glowing eye.
Does what hurt?
The merge.
Oh, no. Not at all. Not in the way you mean. There is no physical sensation at all. That part of you sleeps while your mind is awakened, or opened, rather. You will find your mind has the capacity to open further than you ever would have realized, far more even than that of your brothers and sisters.
Brothers and sisters? Oh, I see. The people of Erda, you mean?
Those two, she sang.
The godchildren as well?
The idea seemed fantastical at the time.
Yes, of course, Udo. They are also your family. I've told you as much many times.
I remember. I'm sorry. It's hard to believe sometimes.
I'm hard to believe, she smiled.
Mother, with all my heart, yes.
She stopped, turned and looked at him. Dark face as soft and diaphanous as those clouds that bring the healing rain. Her arms encircled him, and the sweetness of her breath passed into his ear, saying,
You are of my body, Udo. You are my son, chosen in a way that few, very few, will ever be. You believe that Risa represents the pinnacle of godly design? And so, for a human, it must be so. For a human, Udo. Believe me now when I tell you he is little more than a clockwork upon Regina's bench. Lovingly constructed, it is true, but still only a clockwork.
To what purpose? He croaked.
She released him.
Oh, the same as yours, of course, to rule. But the gods build according to their design, as I've often reminded you. Risa is a blunt instrument, as you now well know. He is named Meldunyaz even today by his people, and so he will continue for as long as is required. You, on the other hand, are not blunt at all. You are very fine, as I have struggled to help you understand. Oh, but shake your head at me now. You are disbelieving me again, I think.
No, yes, I'm sorry. It's only just, well, God damn it, look at me.
She sighed and said,
Your appearance is of little concern. The divinity is here, Udo.
She tapped him lightly between the eyes.
You have a capacity you cannot yet understand, though you will in time.
She turned and continued down the hall, and he was forced to keep up or be left behind.
I don't mean to argue, but I suspect what's within my head is the worst part of me, he muttered.
Perhaps this was once so.
He'll see it, won't he?
Who will see it?
Udo came close to saying his name, but it was still very hard to do so. Two simple letters, and yet the fact he was on his way to meet him, those letters lodged within the throat and would continue no further. Finally, he cleared them away and said,
Godon.
She laughed at that, the sound genuine and musical, and said,
Udo, you poor man. Here, shall I tell you a thing that will help? What if I shared with you the deepest secret of the gods, something so deep and so true that perhaps only one out of every million of your kind will ever come close to intuiting it, even if they lived 1,000 years?
I'll take any knowledge I can, if only it will help me not to fear.
Then here it is, the divine paradox. Humans, though they could not possibly exist without the gods, may yet live in complete ignorance of their existence and find meaning. While the gods, who could easily continue on in humanity's absence, would find existence utterly meaningless without them.
She resumed walking, and he followed. After a few moments, he said,
I'm sorry. I believe you've just told me something critical, but I don't see how it helps me right now.
That is of little concern, she said. Very soon you will.
She began to explain as they passed by another window. It distracted his attention so that her words were lost.
We're here.
What?
He asked. He tore his eyes away from the window and the emptiness beyond. She was standing by a door that looked nearly identical to his own.
I had expected we would have to travel further.
You do. Within this room is the harbor from which you'll depart.
Another craft, he whispered.
No, she said, a throne.
The door opened onto a vast cavity, walled in chiseled slate and roofed with shadows. Peeking through the archway, Udo saw that the shape of the chamber was circular, as large, if not larger, than Dittmar's old throne room. And it certainly was a throne room, he realized. There was the seat itself directly ahead of him. It seemed carved wholly from black rock, as sooty as all else in that place. It looked as though the entire chamber had been lit with burning oil for at least 100 years. Beyond the throne, the far wall swelled forward into a series of repeating ribs, like the understructure of the knarr he'd taken across the Mittlera. The ribs glowed coldly in pale light and glistened and hissed, belching steam into the air. His eyes fell upon the throne, followed the high back upward to the globe suspended overhead. It was as black, if not blacker, than the melam they wore, so black that light was absorbed into it. For all that Udo could tell, it appeared to be perfectly flat, but when he moved to the side, it seemed to turn and follow him. Shining black coils, as slick as snakes' bodies, dangled from the overhead darkness, looping upon themselves in a riot. They gleamed with white highlights that dazzled his eyes. Udo felt a popping in his ears when the door closed. He whirled to find it and could not. It had disappeared from sight. He turned his gaze back to the throne and sighed,
My God.
She took him by the shoulder and said,
Courage. Everything you need to get through this is within you.
The walls, he gasped. They're moving.
Calm. It is only my children. They have come to help you.
He saw the spaces between the ribs in the wall filled with a non-reality that shimmered and bent. He flinched involuntarily, felt her hand brace him with strength. Udo thought there were only two of them, though it was impossible to tell. The chamber seemed to fold in their passage, as if viewed through inky water. As they approached, one of the Dvergas reached toward him with a too long arm ending in a jumble of hooks. Udo pulled away, staring as the thorns, each as long as his forearm, seemed to fold back upon themselves and mold into the arm. It made his eyes water to watch for very long. He found that if he tracked the creatures from the sides of his eyes, it was less sickening. Looking directly at them, he could feel his brain vibrating within its skull, could feel his guts sliding. When it reached out to touch him, Udo felt nothing more than a hand encircle his wrist. It was cold enough to shock, but in the end, it was only a hand.
"They will help you into position," she said.
Udo had seen the pre-death in the eyes of men led to their end. Like gazing into glass orbs, it was a look he well understood. He felt that little death within himself now, the death before dying, the acceptance of his end made bearable only by his mind's refusal to believe in it. The Dvergas carried him to the throne, each foot dragging a line he did not feel. He found the silence of the Dvergas unnerving and sought to make some sort of connection with them. He wanted to speak to them, to hear their voices. It was a plaintive sound, something he would have despised in himself on any other day, when he asked,
I guess this is it. What happens if, what will you do to me if this fails?
The one on his right spoke with Triangle's voice.
You will be laid to gentle rest according to the honors of your people.
There was no care in that voice, no tenderness. Despite this, Udo felt a weak and watery gratitude well up within him at the creature's kindness. When they seated him into the throne, he saw Irpisha again. She stood poised like a dancer, head high and proud. Udo searched her eyes and saw she was there.
Courage, Udo. Remember, others have been through this and have succeeded. You will too.
Have the others?
He stopped himself from saying the rest. He'd nearly asked if the others had carried anything inside of them that must be hidden while their soul was scoured open by the King God. He suspected he already knew the answer. The Melam grabbed hold of the seat and chair back once he'd settled into place, pulling his spine upright as surely as if he'd been strapped in with leather. The Dvergas took his hands in theirs. He assumed they had hands. All he really saw was a smoky mist that made his eyes ache, and laid them atop the armrests. When his palms contacted the surface, two flawless polished metal sheaths rolled up and over his hands, locking down at the wrists. The metal was such that he could see his own reflection in its surface, warped and distorted by their curvature. He stared at the bent and wretched self which stared back at him and struggled to breathe normally. High overhead, a hum began. It sounded like a sleeping giant.
Those aren't restraints, Irpisha called. Don't be frightened by them. That is only the interface.
He closed his eyes.
I don't know what that word means.
He said nothing for a few moments after that. Then, tightening his eyes further, he said,
Ing?
Yes?
He shook his head.
Nothing. I just wanted to call you by your right name before...
His eyes were still closed, but he felt her smile within himself nonetheless. Udo's eyes shot open so that he stared directly at her. She was inside of him. He could feel her. He opened his mouth to praise this wonder, but her eyes narrowed and she shook her head before he could. Then he looked at the Dvergas, who now stood sentinel at his sides, and swallowed. When he looked back to her, she nodded. An almighty hiss erupted as steam belched into the chamber from behind the throne. He flinched away from it, albeit barely. The Melam held him from bolting to the door. The best he could manage was to bow his head and squeeze his eyes shut. A moment later, he realized he still lived and opened them again. His surroundings were now obscured by a slow dissipating cloud, but he thought he could still see her standing like a shadow among the shadows. She was insubstantial and dark and reminded him of the creatures that brought him to this end. It was an end, he realized. He stood poised upon a sheer drop and knew that if he looked down, there he would see his own remains staring back up at him.
Oh, Oh, gods of Erda and Talam, there are two of me.
The humming intensified and deepened. It lowered until it throbbed the entire chamber, until the steam hanging in the air shivered under its power. The hum plunged still deeper, lower, until finally he could no longer hear it. He felt it only, grinding away at his insides like a rasp. He remembered the barber's rasp in the Walhazian fields. They used it to grind down the jagged bone shocks left behind when they took an arm or leg. His eyes watered and trembled within their sockets until he could barely see. He realized he was sweating. He felt it coming out of him from everywhere, coming so fast that the godskin couldn't wick it away. Now breathing very fast, hyperventilating, looking up, seeing the hateful globe. It was the source of the silent hum. It was an alien mind glowing darkly, descending upon him. The black and wetly shining ropes looped around it descended as well, stretching out for him. He realized that they were serpents, and they were coming hungrily. He breathed. He watched them come. He had forgotten how to scream. First there was the tunnel. It reminded him of the passage from Erda to Talam. Interminable. It vanished to a place he could not see. Filled with silent colors like afterimages painted upon the insides of his eyes, he fell through reds, blues, greens, yellows that brought to mind certain flowers he'd seen, swirling like oil on water, enwrapping him, enfolding him, passing through him. Weightless. He was both falling and weightless. He was flying. He'd been loosed like an arrow toward some unknowable shore. He wanted desperately to shriek, but he had no mouth. He had neither the legs to kick nor the arms to flail. The tunnel stretched on. His mind, frightened beyond sense, searched for an anchor, some sense of itself. He began with his name, Udo. He reminded himself that he'd once been named Udo and that there was a very good reason for him to be here. This place, whatever it was, had been meant for him. He was supposed to focus upon something, or rather, he was supposed to focus on nothing. He did not recall. Something was to have been hidden away, and he could not remember what that something might have been. He tried to find it. Udo. Your name is Udo, he thought. Your name is Udo, and you were sent here to... To what? He couldn't find it. The colors parted before him so that he saw a tiny speck of blackness ahead. He suspected the end of the tunnel. He tried to look away and could not. He had no eyes. Who sent you to this place, then? He wondered. Never mind the why. Who was it? A man. No. Once a man. A woman? Does that feel right? Why does nothing feel right? The colors lengthened and thinned, stretching ahead to the black speck like a funnel. He felt himself constricted through it. There was no pain. He lacked a body and so could not feel. He began to forget the taste of fear. The distant black speck grew larger and he watched it in curiosity.
Courage, Udo.
Who is that? He wanted to shout, but could not. The voice had come like a whisper from a lover. He sent his own question rebounding as a screaming thought.
Who?
The tunnel filled with the low moan of creation, the voice of the very universe itself. All places, all times, all people who had ever lived in the worlds of the diaspora called back to him. They called to him in the tired gasp of a dying star.
Who comes?
He did not answer. He stared transfixed at the growing blackness ahead. The colors of the tunnel that imprisoned him now poured toward it as if that dark pit drew it all in. They fell faster than he could follow, spilled around the empty center, the black hole, swirled around the edges in wild shades of blue and green and brown and yellow and red. They flickered around the blackness, throbbed and swirled like a maelstrom. The black hole was the most perfect shape he'd ever seen. Absolutely round. It sucked in light and cast out shadow like a living animal.
Who comes?
Growing larger still, the breadth of an entire world, Now an entire colony of worlds could have nestled in the center of that vast ocean, a bit of debris swallowed in the waves. The colors swirled at the far-off edges, lengthened, thinned to whiteness. He thought he saw them thin to whiteness. The edges were so far off now. He tried to sense in the direction of the whiteness. He thought he could see the white disturbed by ripping red shocks jolting through the murk like lightning, jagging back and forth, alien canyons plunging inward to cradle.
Who comes?
The lidless eye of the Creator.
Oh, gods! Oh, God! Oh, my God!
His mind raced.
Udo? Udo? Udo comes?
The periphery faded. He faded. The voice of the universe dissected him. It was pulling him apart, atomizing his consciousness. He was surrounded in the void. He drifted naked through the outer chaos.
Udo? Udo? Udo?
He was nearly gone, pulled apart piece by piece in the impossible gravity of that eye, that intelligence. Only a fraction of himself remained, the final core of instinct that fought, finally, to escape the end of all existence, the part of the mind that offers the last horrified understanding gasp when the heart stops. When the mind dies. The Udo personality had one last thought before the final dissolution. The gods are not the first creators.